Blog Talk Radio.
Because we want to stay alive in Toret Chaim, instructions of life, Toret Chesed, instructions of kindness, Toret Rachamim, instructions of mercy. You now tune into the higher inner frequency of Soul Class 494 Secular by Design program presentation number 41, which is part and parcel of the blessed blogtalkradio.com network. This is the generation of redemption from blessed brother in soul and prayer, Rev Isaac Patton, who is back again as he was last week incarnate praying. I'm praying right next to him every day, blessed souls, and this is his music. And also, I just want to let you know that he is the president of Beit Mazal, 1433 President Street in Crown Heights, where you can hear authentic prayer according to Jewish, Moroccan, African, Sephardic Nusach, the liturgical and singing style. With that being said, we're going to have to turn on Rabbi Isaac and bring our coast and get on right with the shoe. Here we go. Oh, Rabbi Isaac, please forgive me for that. Oh, here we go. We're going right into the show. We're going to bring in right now Rambam, teacher, student, disseminator, and promoter of the teachings of Rambam. My name is Hanesher Gadol, the great eagle, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning to you, Don. How's everything?
Baruch Hashem, and I want to dedicate the program today, Dennis, to a young woman who is one of our listeners, and I'm a Facebook friend of hers, that she's expecting some results from a blood test, and we pray to the Almighty that although the blood test was given, that may the test be favorable, and she continue to go from strength to strength in all her endeavors, because not only she is a positive businesswoman, a positive business person, she's a wonderful mother and an empower of other human souls. So to you out there, you know who I'm saying, for reasons of confidentiality, I'm not going to say your name, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. May the Most High bless you and strengthen you, go from strength to strength in helping other human beings. With that being said, Dennis, and bless yourselves listening out there, and by the way, we have about 25 minutes to go. You can call in if you want to join the organic conversation with Dennis and myself at 347-838-8669, and of course we'll be reading from live from Turtle Island, aka the USA, Unifying Soul Actualization, from Alan W. Cecil's seminal work Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances. We're in the section called Protocols of the Philosopher, page 83, within the context of understanding that it wasn't just the intellectuals in Britain and France were not alone in their attitudes towards the Jews, who they considered to be barbarous. I'll be quoting now, as Dennis did, from Rabbi Raphael Shamshon Hirsch's The Hirsch Psalms, meaning Hirsch's commentaries on the Psalms of David and the other nine authors of Psalms. Because, by the way, blessed souls, not only did King David write them, but 9 other authors did. And one day we'll start a series on Psalms going from 1 to 150 with the Most High's help, and we'll elucidate more on those matters. So Rabbi Hirsch from his Hirsch Psalms, page 392, wrote, "The enemies of the Jewish people, in justification of their own conduct, have pointed out many times that, from the very beginning of its history, meaning our history as Jews, this people had found no sympathy among the nations. Instead, they say, Israel has met with nothing but hostility and hatred throughout the world. Israel's enemies think this is sufficient reason for all future generations to cultivate and to transmit to their descendants the old hatred which the nations have long harbored against the Jews. It was not at the people of Israel, but the ideals of Zion that this hatred has been aimed from the very beginning, the hatred of the ideals represented by Zion because of the enemies of the Jews." Now, I want to be very clear right now, blessed is, we're not talking about what is known as the modern-day Zionist movement. The idea of Zion is that a human being can distinguish him or herself by engaging in acts of kindness, learning the scripture plus the oral Torah tradition, and performing acts of kindness along with acts of prayer and anything they can do to make this a more peaceful and pleasant abode upon the earth. So the ideals of Zion, as we're talking about here again, should not be confused with the modern Zionist movement, which is a little over 100 years old, which I myself publicly must remind people, I am not a Zionist, I am not a religious Zionist, I am not a political Zionist, I am a Torah-observant Jew, and I say that without blinking an eye, because that's what I'm trying to work on myself and to purify myself, and hopefully in the process of strengthening myself, I can help another person get connected to God. Dennis?
Well, let's not mix and match here, Don. We have people who hate Jews because we don't really know why they hate them, but they believe they're bad, and they've been labeled as being different, but different not in a friendly way, different in their own way. But the basis of all Christianity is the same basis for all Judaism. So it's hard for me to believe that there are people who hate groups of people who are trying to do good. Because that's completely diametrically opposed. Because if someone's trying to do good and you hate them, are you really hating their goodness?
Mm-hmm. I hear you, Dennis. And we'll continue now with Alan's writing here on page 83. By the end of the 19th century, with the wave of anti-Semitism unfortunately erupting in France and spreading throughout Europe, it was clear that from the Jewish standpoint, the Enlightenment had failed. Neither Christian nor secular European culture could tolerate the Jews. And by the early 20th century, great numbers of Jews had the Irish a generation earlier fled Europe, particularly Eastern Europe, and settled in America. The spirit of the Enlightenment helped develop a system where the state took the place of the church in many aspects. As the Industrial Revolution changed society, increased the wealth and power of Western states, unfortunately wars became more and more prevalent and more bloody, culminating with the world wars of the 20th century. As for the superior morality of the enlightened philosophers, the French Enlightenment produced the French Revolution, where during the Reign of Terror in 1793 to 1794, nearly 20,000 people were guillotined. Wow, I guess ISIS could learn from them. When Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, all these other groups, when Ireland was hit by the potato blight, close to 1 million people died of starvation and disease. I guess the Nazis could have learned from that as well. Here in America, our treatment of the Native American Indians and the African Americans who were enslaved and even long after they were freed was just as bad. In Germany, a state that many considered to be the most civilized nation on the earth in the early 20th century, the events of the 1930s and 1940s speak for themselves. The dream of society without religion and without the constraints of biblical morality, the sort of society which John Stuart Mill espoused, as well as today's atheistic intellectuals such as Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, and to my great pain to mention my fellow brother, elderly Jew Noam Chomsky, was fulfilled in the regimes of the Soviet Union China, where Stalin's command economy and Great Purge, along with Mao Zedong's Great Leap Forward and Cultural Revolution created horrors that topped even Hitler's body count. And that's true. I don't know the body count in China, but I do remember learning from the Stalinist purges when Joseph Stalin was ruling Russia, 20 million people were killed because he had a classical diagnosable form of paranoia, where I know that from talking with my fellow Jews who came from Russia, they had learned from their parents, when he spoke publicly, Stalin did, and people would clap after the conclusion of his speech or a portion of his speech, the first person who was seen as stopping to clap could be face arrest for rebellion for stopping their clapping with all the enthusiasm they had previously had generated. However, Alan points out, without the moral foundation of the Torah, the man-made systems of enlightened philosophical morality fell far short of achieving peaceful societies. In fact, they promoted, I'm going to add parenthetically, very blood warmongering societies. And I just want to mention one more thing in terms of the spread of anti-Semitism, especially through the work of Mein Kampf, which was written by Hitler, Yivak Shmal, that during the 1930s, it was translated into Arabic, which further poisoned the minds of the unsuspecting Arabic masses in the Middle East to further infuse their minds with more hatred of us as a people. But again, blessed souls, we're not here to say, oi, voy, voy, woe is us, look how people pick on us. The point is, we have an agenda to spread biblical ideas, which the majority of the biblical teachings have universal application, implementation, especially through the seven universal commandments, but as well as just for creating a society, a worldly society, where each culture can be respected unto itself as long as it tries to tap into these seven axiomatic Torah commands. Dennis?
Yes, well, let's begin with the concept of how come the Jews are still around. In other words, a lot of people say, I thought we got rid of them already. Why do they keep coming back? Why are they so persistent? What gives them sustenance to keep on going? And this bothers a lot of people, because the idea is that the Jews, as we know it, haven't really changed. They're still talking about what was in the Bible, all the principles, all the foundations. And some people say, well, why do they keep reminding us? There's a purpose behind it, and a lot of people don't see that. But the only time the Jews ever get a break is when there's a greater hatred to concentrate on. But when all those other hatreds are done with, out comes the hatred for the Jews. Now, it's nice to have the scapegoat that you can always throw rocks at them, because everybody's in agreement, yes, they were the cause of the problem, but they weren't the problem. They didn't have anything to do with the problem. If they're preaching good things, follow what you were designed and what the plan of God is for, how can you say they're doing things wrong? Yet we have governments that came out in the Middle Ages saying, how are we going to stop the Jews from spreading their poison? Now, poison of what? Poison from the Bible? It's called the Good Book, and it's called the Good Book for a particular reason, because there is no poison in it. But yet people persist in their minds that if there's something wrong, there's a Jewish person behind it, and they're working all the time to do this. So we're dealing with a perception here, Don. We're not dealing with... But the humans love these perceptions, because it's easy to point a finger or blame if you don't get the facts. And most people don't want to hear the facts because they want the status quo. In other words, what was done before is today. They don't realize that over a period of time, the good things remain good and the bad things remain bad.
What you're saying, Dennis, as I understand it, before I read a little bit more of Alan's book, is that let's say many people, I'm not going to say most people, but many people, especially those who are in power of guiding societies logistically, politically, spiritually, want to follow a deterministic form of sovereignty where, you know, we're the game or the conditions are according to how we perceive it, and we will reject anything that challenges our perceptions, even though, again, as I mentioned before, the whole idea, and I'll recapitulate, the idea of integrating the seven universal commandments into every human nation upon the blessed face of the earth is to integrate it according to their conditions, their sensitivities. So on the one hand, like say in one country where they don't like the idea of eating meat, even though for sure you're allowed to eat meat according to biblical standards, if they want to make it into something which should not be done, and the majority of the society, though the wise men of that society deem it not proper, they have that force of the Torah to make it sort of say a beautification of what they would be considered to be, you know, not to permit acts of cruelty against an animal, even though I would most forcefully argue that the means of slaughtering an animal by kosher, the kosher slaughtering process is the most humane, even though you might say people from, eating meat organization, PETA, is it? PETA has gone into factories, and the truth is, in some slaughter factories, kosher factories, there has been not proper treatment of animals, and no one is going to say, hey, it's all okay as long as we get our kosher meat. And for sure, there's also been captured on video how animals are treated very inhumanely in non-kosher slaughtering plants. The point is every society, every culture, every nation, if they get supercharged by these seven universal commandments, they'll see that it's not that we have some agenda to overrule, overtake the world, but rather this is an agenda that God has told us at Mount Sinai, and even before that, that this is a way to stabilize the creation. But instead of, now turning back to the page 84 of Alan's book so we can get some more of his dialogue into this presentation today, the philosophers of the 18th and 19th century endeavored to replace the morality of the Torah/Bible with other moral systems derived from their own philosophical reason. Now, from there, Alan chose to quote from Maimonides' Commentary on the Ethics of the Father, published by Feldholm in 1983, page 187, by Paul Forsheimer, that the accepted Jewish analysis of the problem is that apostasy does not start in the rational, but that it is rather the result of a strong desire to commit certain transgressions. These are later justified by the subservient intellect, which really, as anti-mystical as Rambam is and as pro-rational as he is, this is actually a teaching which is actually very deeply outsourced from the Hasidic interdimensional teachings of Torah, that if you want to do something, that nothing will stand before you to stop you, but what you will do is you will intellectually generate the rationalization to justify it in order to carry out whatever your desire is. Going on in Alan's book, then we'll turn to Dennis for some commentary, feedback, whatever. As we have seen, the non-Jewish philosophy, or the Noahide, the Aaron, that branch of the Noahide family, Aaron philosophy, developed during the Enlightenment. And I say Noahide because everyone, according from the biblical perspective, is a direct descendant of one of Noah's three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. The Noahide non-Jewish philosophy developed during the Enlightenment, no matter how elegant and erudite, how sophisticated the methodology, did not provide the answers to the primary questions of human behavior. Where did the universe come from? What is God? Or I might say, who is God? Why are we here? What is good and evil, etc.? No matter how grand and logical the teachings of the philosophers of the matter of ethics were, there was a vast disconnect between their personal beliefs and behavior and the teachings of the Torah. And there, Dennis plucks out a quote from a book by Samuel from page 154. And it was a book that, I guess, this book was written in response to the tremendous anti-Semitism, I believe, in the 1920s. This book was written, You Gentiles, where this man, Samuel, was responding to the anti-Semitism by addressing this issue. Philosophies do not remold natures. What your radicals want is another form of the game with other rules. So with that being said, the questionable morality of the philosophers of the Enlightenment show the influence of guess who? Our old friends, our ancient friends, the Greeks and the Romans. And this is also quoted by Chaim Maccabi in Anti-Semitism and Modernity, Innovation and Continuity. Voltaire found his rationalization of anti-Semitism in history. He argued that the Jews had always been despised, even before Christian times. He certainly adduced pagan writers such as Tacitus, Juvenal, and Cicero to prove this point. And so the question morality of the philosopher of the Enlightenment show the influence of the Greeks and the Romans and how their ideas were combined and synthesized into a new academic model, a model that has since affected practically all theological and historical study of Israel by both the church and secular academia. Practically every non-Jewish, or I would say Noahide commentary on the New Testament, and every study in ancient Judaism has been affected by it directly or indirectly. And this is here Alan quoted from an author by the name of Alan Bloom, The Closing of the American Mind, by Simon and Schuster, published by Simon and Schuster in 1987, page 253. Reason transformed into prejudice is the worst form of prejudice. Dennis?
All humans are imperfect. Everybody knows that, yes, or should be reminded from time to time. But we do have rationalizations. All humans rationalize things because they figured, that's my version, that's my perception. Well, if you apply this to good and bad, that means that you're rationalizing what are the limits of good, upper and lower, and bad, upper and lower. Well, that's a game changer. If you start doing that, then you're affecting what is moral, what is not moral. Yet, there was a group who has, throughout history, stayed by the original concept, what is moral and what is immoral. But people who are allowed to rationalize now can make the difference between reality and fantasy. So they start allowing reasons, rationalizations to why they can insert certain fantasies into their into their reality. So if you do that, the perception has changed. Now, to say that everybody has hated the Jews long before Christianity came along, it's probably for the same reason that people are still anti-Semitic today. And that is that your rationalization is that these people are different. And if they're different, they're bad, or they don't do it the way we do it. But why do they persist in these things? Yet, we have a lot of people today that say, oh yes, I read the good book. But where in the good book does it say you should despise Jews because they're bad? They spread poison and they're trying to overthrow government. It goes on and on and on. What happens is when you talk about Judaism, everything can be thrown in and the kitchen sink. And what happens is the rationalization is, oh, that's the Jews again. So once this perception is carried on from generation to generation, it doesn't change. Now, within the Jewish community, they are perplexed to a certain extent that why are these people so mad at me when they don't even know me? And all I am doing is promoting the morals and the principles that are in the Bible. Yet these are the same people who say they read it, they believe in it, and it's the good book. Well, what is the difference? The difference is perception and rationalizations that humans are constantly applying. And if you think that there's always a group that's going to take the benefit, the bad side of the benefit of the doubt, well, that's easy. It must be the Jews, because at all problems, and this is a perception that a lot of people have, all problems with humanity has been caused by the Jews. Well, that's nice, but it's never been proven, and people don't care about the proof because in their perception they believe it, and they can rationalize it and say, see, that's what I'm talking about. And you can't stop that because that's like something running around in the air, and it doesn't have any foundation anywhere, but it persists.
And unfortunately, what happens is that it morphs into other forms of hatred, not just of us, but then it, you can use that, people can use it against the Chinese, against the Africans, against the Hispanics,
yes,
against the Arabs, against the Polish, against the whatever. It's really just a self-fulfilling, delusionary promotion. You know, listen to this. You're different from me. I'm different from your wife. Your wife is different than my wife. But yet, you married your wife because there's a commonality which was strong enough to bring together the both of you despite your differences, just as there's a greater commonality between my wife and myself, that despite our differences, we have chosen to live as husband and wife. And this is the thing that many people are afflicted of, is that because the differences becomes the commonality as opposed to the commonality which can help, again, integrate the differences into a higher consciousness, when just because we don't see eye to eye on things, that doesn't mean we can't be friends. So I want to read in the final section of today's presentation, Blessed Souls, we're going down to the bottom of page 84 and some potent statements to prove how barbarous we really are as a Jewish people based on teachings of one of our great sages, the Pnei Yeshua. But let's just read and see how barbarous you think we really are with what I'm going to be quoting from the Pnei Yeshua. The grand ideas and concepts such as freedom and equality, as expounded by philosophers such as Voltaire, Kant, and Hegel, influenced not only the historical books of the Enlightenment, but all branches of the social sciences. Freedom, from the rabbinical viewpoint, is not simply another theological, philosophical, individualistic attribute or idea. And now we're going to quote from the Pnei Yeshua, literally the face of Joshua. And here it is. In order for a person to appreciate freedom, he or she must value the freedom of others, just as he or she values his or her own freedom. The Enlightenment concept of freedom was first and foremost freedom from the Torah. And I'll conclude with a quote from Rabbi Hirsch's Collected Writings, Volume 1, page 232. As Rabbi Hirsch observed, these enlightened human beings, these philosophers, make sure not to burden their children with knowledge of God, so that the children will, without scruples, without trepidation, and without hesitation, follow the footsteps which the irresponsibility of their fathers has marked out for them. It is better to entrust yourself and your child to the guidance of your God than to commit yourself and to him to everyday sagacity and those thought of as intelligent, whose sagacity in reality is blinded by the attractions of profit and pleasure. So those are two teachings, Dennis, on the Pnei Yeshua, meaning in order for you and I to appreciate freedom, we've got to appreciate the freedom of others just as you and I appreciate our own personal freedom. And again, we should put our guidance in God. Could you come up with a more barbaric teaching than this?
Not really, but you got to remember, humans are finicky at times. And for those who keep preaching good, 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 we sometimes feel like, why are they reminding us? I'm not that bad. I'm not going to hell because I know what I'm doing. But if you keep saying good, 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 eventually it isn't the concept of good, it's the messenger. Go after the messenger, and maybe that disagreement will go away. So, if the Jews have been preaching the same thing for millennium, we've got to get them out of the way because they cause problems with previous generations because they keep causing this disturbance. The disturbance is that we're not being good. And we have to be reminded of being good. But if someone tells you you're not good, even though they're not making a judgment on you, does that mean that the messenger is spreading poison? And that we got to get rid of the messengers? Because we know where we can fit in our rationalization of the philosophy behind it. So do we know where our hatred is directed? Because it can't be faceless. We have to put a face on it, especially if someone is wearing a yarmulke.
Thank you, Dennis. Dennis, we've come to the conclusion of our program. I'm going to end off with, you know, at the end of Alan's book, he suggests, as we've talked, I've talked with him privately, I think he's mentioned on our program presentations, that the 7 years of commandments are actually seven categories of commandments, which branch out into many. And at the end of his book, by page 434, he goes on to list what he believes are integratable 209 commandments from the Torah that the nations of the world can fulfill. In fact, there are other opinions from other rabbis, other scholars, that the children of Noah, meaning all the nations of the world, can keep up to 611, which basically negates the comment of those who would seek to undermine our efforts to saying, well, the Jews want to just keep the children of Noah down with their seven and we'll let them, and they want to keep their 613. But again, truth be told, when we go into these teachings from the perspective of truly seeking the knowledge of the Torah, we see there's much more to behold than just seven general commandments or seven categories. And Alan, please, just anything concluding remark on your part, and then I'm going to read something.
What is obvious, if you want to accept the truth, you must accept the whole truth. You can't say, I'll accept little bits and pieces of the truth because I find them more agreeable. If the truth is not agreeable or you don't believe in it, then reject it. But don't say you're going along with the truth because you have bits and pieces that seem to be more amenable. So if you want the truth, you must accept the whole truth.
Thank you, Dennis. So we're going to end off on an uplifting note. Again, one of the commandments that Alan feels is integratable, implementable in any human society, culture, community, nation, whatever you want to say, even faith, religion, if you want to say, is the commandment of believing in the existence of Hashem, of the Creator. And and I'll end off with just this little portion of this teaching as he cited as a source for his asserting this should be a commandment which is universally accepted upon by the children of all the nations of the world, this blessed world, the mitzvah to believe in the existence of God, which the scriptural sources in the book of Exodus, chapter 20, verse 2. The root of this commandment, you don't really have to explain because the matter is known and revealed to all. For faith, this type of faith is the foundation of this type of lifestyle, the lifestyle of having faith in Creator. And if a person is not going to have a faith and integrate into the existence of the Creator, if he does not, then they're basically in denial of the essence of the Creator of the creation, which is basically because they have some sort of, sullied consciousness, what we call in Hebrew, timtum alev, like a dullness of the heart. But it's also connected to a dullness of the mind because they just haven't gotten access to the right information. And in truth, from the Sefer Chinuch, the book of dedication, the book of education, a person can make an effort to establish within their soul that this is the truth, and not to exchange this truth for any other truth, but rather to make that as a person will express their faith, it is already what is something which should be fully sealed and accepted and internalized within his or her human heart. So on that note, blessed souls, we're going to end off now with our segue ending music from my brother David Dome, who will help us get back home with a wonderful song, which is a newly produced song. It's called You Give Your Power Away Too Soon. And we're going to be playing this song for the first time in the month of June, under the sun and the moon. And I just remind everyone, you've got to be good. And you might say, why, Don, do I have to be good? You're giving me feelings of ambivalence and anxiety. No, Bezos, I'm not here to give you anxiety. I'm not here to make your wife worse. I'm here to remind you, Hateva Tov Lehetiv, it's the nature of the good to do good. It is the Creator, is the source of all good, who has put you on this earth to be a faithful steward along with 7 billion other blessed human beings, 7 billion plus. There's not a population explosion. There's a population expansion. It's just that there are certain human beings who don't buy into the Creator's plan. Therefore, that's why we have strife between man and man and between woman and woman and woman and man and man and woman in any configuration you want to figure out with. So let's just get on with the music, and this should all be accomplished in the way of Ahav Echad, one love, Goral Echad, one destiny, Kolano, Badarchi Noam, in a pleasant way, Dark Yisholm, in a peaceful way, Laham Sheikh, to be continued by Hashem with the help of the Most High. Take care, everyone.